Who would be a water spud, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wolves Fancast. My name is Matt Guy. I'm joined by Jaffo and Andy, and we are here unenviably this evening to talk about Wolves versus Arsenal, or Arsenal versus Wolves, in a shellacking today at the Emirates. But gentlemen, first and foremost, how are we?
All right. I mean, it's Sunday evening, but at least we haven't got work tomorrow, so can't complain, really.
Speak for yourself, bad boy.
thank God it was. Thank God it's all over.
Yeah, I know. Doom and gloom day for Wolves. To be fair, 5-0 to Arsenal. The Gunners rampant on their last day of the season with Wolves firing blanks. Goals from Xhaka, Saka, Jesus. And Kiwior, is that right? Sealed the victory for them. We will go into more details about the results in a short while, but we need a bit of foreplay first to get us through before we talk about that uncomfortable result. I'm going to try and get through as many comments as possible today to try and lighten the mood a little bit. Andrew Knight, hello. Thank you for joining us. All right, lads, what a shit show, absolutely. Try and get your comments in if you can. Thank you for everybody that's watching us on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook. Do our very best to get your comments across as well. There is a tiny bit of housekeeping before we go any further. We have a charity football match, the Content Classico 2023 at Molineux on Friday, the 2nd of June. There are some spectator tickets if you'd like to watch us fall over spectacularly or basically try and make a run along the wing like I did in the last game, or foul another beloved Twitter personality and give away a penalty. But Wolves Fancast versus Upload United, the link for the donation page will be on the socials. Any donation that you can make, big or small, is really appreciated, and it goes towards a great cause. So we would really appreciate any donations that you can give. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about some of the other good news around the Premier League this season. Leeds and Leicester have been relegated. Jaffo, from your point of view, at the start of the season, would you have tipped either of these clubs to go down?
I mean, I would be a liar if I said yes, because Leicester should not be getting relegated with the players that they've got. Leeds, I mean, maybe you could say, yeah, you could argue that they'd be in and around there, because Ted Lasso, he just isn't a very good football coach. But yeah, certainly Leicester, that is the biggest surprise in probably the last sort of 5 or 6 years of the size of a club getting relegated. You know, you've got Premier League winners in there, like Jamie Vardy, and I know he didn't start for Leicester today, but you've got players there who've won titles and played in Champions League football. They have no right sleepwalking into a relegation into the Championship. But here we are in the end of May, and Leicester will now be playing their trade in the Championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy, from your point of view, Everton surviving after they beat Bournemouth today, just about literally by the skin of their teeth. How hilarious would it have been if they had have gone down? And ultimately, if you could have had it any other way, would it have been Everton relegated? What would your perfect relegation decider have been?
Yeah, I think of the three teams who were left battling it out today, Everton were the ones who wanted to go, let's be honest. Like, yeah, as Matt's pointing out, the whole Conor Cody of it all would have made it that little bit sweeter as well, to be perfectly honest. So I would have quite liked Everton to have gone. It would have been as funny as when Villa got relegated previously. Like, they're the team who've always been in the Premier League, but they've almost always made up the numbers. So it's about time that one of the bigger boys went. Leeds, I mean, it's always funny to see Leeds fuck up. It's bread and butter at this point, isn't it, with that club? But Jaffo's right. I mean, there's absolutely no way that Leicester should have even been in this conversation. I think I saw, I don't know if it was the Price of Football guy saying earlier that Leicester have been relegated with the highest wage of any club ever in the Premier League. So, like, wow. It's inexcusable to have had the money that they've had pumped into that club in the, what are we looking at, 7 years since they won the Premier League? Mm-hmm. They've pretty penny and they've spent a lot on wages. And now they're looking at, like, what, probably about a 70-80% cut in their income. Like, if they don't really have a massive cull across the summer, they could be looking at, you know, maybe not getting back up in 12 months' time. It's going to be a season for Leicester next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is a really good question that we can pose on the back of this. In terms of the relegated teams, is there anybody, Jaffo, that you think... Let's put aside this FFP and everything else that we've been talking about for the last week, 10 days or so. In an ideal world and a realistic world, who from the three relegated teams would you like to pick up for Wolves? Who would we need? Who would be beneficial to us?
I'm still going to be pretty pragmatic about it. But if I was going to go, if I take one from Southampton, I'd take Perrault. I really like him, the left back. I think he's a very solid, solid player. I think he'd do well for us. A little bit more experience that we need in that position. Leeds, I'd probably go Aronson. I think he's a very good footballer. I think it's sort of that energy that we don't have in midfield, sort of in between the lines. I mean, we've started to add more of it and more of it, but I think it's just another area where we could improve. And then sort of Leicester, I'd probably be looking at the young right back that they've got, the one that they had from Luton. He's a very good fullback, and I think that's another area where I think where Wolves especially need to be looking at in the summer is fullbacks again, which seems to be a recurring theme.
Absolutely. The other big news over the weekend was Luton Town being promoted to the Premier League. I mean, it's easy to say this, oh, they're fodder to go straight back down, absolutely, but this season, all the promoted teams staying up, it's one of those really where actually you can never really put a thing on this. But Andy, from your point of view, looking ahead to the season coming up, from Luton's point of view, it would be an absolute, I mean, we talk about films on our other podcast, it would be something of a Hollywood miracle if they did anything other than about 10 points, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they've got to be concerned about being like the lowest ever Premier League scorer. It's incredible to think of a club of that size who, like, what was it, about 11, 12 years ago, they had a 30-point deduction and were basically knocked out of the Football League. And their comeback has been absolutely astounding, just incredible. But yeah, going forward, I haven't seen a lot of them, granted, but I watched most of the match yesterday and they did not look good. They'll struggle next season, I think. And I know we said the same about Bournemouth when they came up this year, but Bournemouth have been in the Premier League before and they've got that bit of nous. But I think for Luton, unless they bring in a lot of players, they're really going to struggle. And if they do bring in a lot of players, they're probably going to struggle a little bit like Forest did. Eventually it came good for Forest. Will it happen for Luton? I don't know. Plus, who's really going to want to go to Luton other than maybe the more mercenary type players? So they could be in for a bit of a tough season next season. But as you say, it's just a fantastic story.
Yeah, it really is. Fancast have all of the previews over the summer period, so you can keep up to date with all of the Wolves news and Premier League news and everything that's going on with football over the summer period as well. So don't think for a second it's all end of the season, end of the content, because we're going to have a lot over the summer as well. But unfortunately, I've put it off long enough. We will have to talk about this game today, unfortunately. From a lineup point of view, there's a few changes and Raul on the cover there after the controversial choice not to bring him on against Everton, let's say. Bueno makes the lineup, Collins and Kilman as your centre back pairing. Adama Traore and Hwang as well there. Saar returning to the team also. from that lineup point of view, were there any surprises, or is it just this time of the season you're going to get Frankenstein lineups? And did it, I mean, did it really matter before the whistle was even blew, Jaffo?
I mean, yeah, as you said, it doesn't really matter. But I don't know if it makes him look weak that he starts Jimenez in this game, because I know he felt like he made a mistake by admitting him and having all the issue against Everton by not bringing him in. But it just doesn't make Lopetegui look very strong that he's then brought him in for essentially his worst swan song game.
Mm.
And you've either got to be a person who's going to be, like, you know, committed to being emotionally invested in the players and being this sort of father figure to them, or you're the manager. You can't flip flat between the two each week, because it just damages his position of strength within that dressing room, messing around with things like that. And then sort of the rest of the team, yeah, okay. The other areas are okay. They're pretty good. But I just think we know what to expect when we get Collins and Kilman in there. And that's the problem, is we've seen it. And it's just a shame, because I know we'll probably talk about Collins a little bit more later, but it's a shame to see a player who looked like he had a lot of potential at Burnley come in and sort of be thrown to the proverbial wolves, as it were, by playing with such a disjointed team and a team that's struggling for defensive solidity before Dawson came in.
We will come on to Collins a little later. Someone I want to talk about long-term at Wolves, but we'll do that in the second half of the podcast. Andy, I mean, I don't know if it was being ever the optimist, but it had, at least I thought, the making of that, at least twilight, not the sparkly vampires, but the twilight of his Wolves career story of Raul scoring against Arsenal. Not a redemption story, because it's not like, it, you know, with the injury, it wasn't, you know, him to any of his failures, but it was written for me in the stars for him to score against them. And I really thought Arsenal wouldn't turn up for this, if I'm brutally honest. They'd lost the league, they faltered under Forrest, and it just didn't really work out that way. None of the players really pushed themselves, I thought, in the opening minutes of the game, and obviously we conceded very, very early on. How did you see the game from your point prior to it? What were your expectations, and then how were they battered during the start of the game?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the script was all written, wasn't it? It's the place that Raul Jimenez had his almost, you know, life-threatening injury, let's be quite frank about it. And this was going to be his final match, we think, for Wolves. It was written in the stars, and then we were like, what, 5 minutes in, and somehow Xhaka ghosted in between two defenders and put the ball in the net, and all of a sudden it was never going to happen. The game completely changed immediately. I think everyone's hopes were up a little bit. As you say, Arsenal, over the last couple of months, they've pretty much stumbled through the last part of the season. And I don't think we'd have got a result, don't get me wrong, but I thought we'd have had a performance and there'd be some battle in there. And that's what I was really hoping for. And I know other people I'd spoke to and saw on Twitter was hoping for the same thing. Mm. And it just ended up being an absolute shit show within 15 minutes. Somehow Granit Xhaka, of all people, he just ghosted into the box twice, scored two very simple goals. Like, he's a big bastard clogger. Like, that's not the kind of player he is. And he somehow had the deftest of touches. We made him look like prime Pirlo. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. Ridiculous. And I actually said, we'll come on to Collins, but he had a bit of a calamity within the first half an hour. And I don't think he or the team ever recovered after that.
Yeah. The thing is, for me, you know, you can chop and change at this stage of the season. And I understand it, but what you want to see are the players that are on the fringes putting in a performance that makes the manager ask questions. And, you know, it's easy, you know, when we're not in anywhere near even a sniff of that professional locker room atmosphere and everything else, and what it takes to be a professional footballer. But you would think, as a human being, for people that aren't getting regular game time, they would want to show up, but it didn't feel that way. Danny P has put in the chat, trusting Danny P here, that this is exactly what has been said. But he's quoted saying that because we're already safe, some players prefer to have little surgeries, including Neto, Podence and Costa, including a little surgery in his nose for Podence. not sure what that means. But yeah, a couple of players opting to have surgery at the end of the season, which I suppose makes sense. The quicker you can get those in, the better in terms of recovery time. There is a couple of, you know, comments in the chat about Neto in training, jumping around. He's always injured and a waste of time. Yeah, he's not one this season that has really, you know, come back from injury. And he had his promising moments, but not always on the top form that he's had previous to this. Saka scored a wonderful third, to be fair. I mean, Bueno really struggled today, Defoe. He, you know, they were targeting that side. And he hasn't had, you know, when he came in earlier in the season, it was to a lot of fanfare. He did really well and cemented his place. And then injuries and other things meant he's been then in and out of the squad. Was it just a bad day at the office for Bueno? Or do you think, you know, it's something that Wolves need to consider, and strength in those fullback positions is something we need to bolster in the summer?
I think there's a certain amount of rustiness that comes into it, because obviously he's obviously been out, and Toti Gomez has been playing that position. And to come up against today, against probably the best right winger in the league, although he's had quite a few weeks in Bukayo Saka, he's always going to be tough for a young lad. And, you know, it's essentially his first full season in professional football. So it's one of those. And as you mentioned it about strength in depth. I think that is the side that we probably need to look at more, because obviously with Ait Nouri not really getting a look in over the past couple of months, and Toti Gomez, he's a very, very, very good in fullback position, but I think most fans would want somebody who is like a designated fullback, somebody who's more attuned to that position. So that's why I was talking about Perot earlier, somebody like that, somebody who's like late 20s, maybe even touching 30, who can have a lot of professional minutes under their belt, who can go in there and do a very, very good job and bring Hugo Bueno on, because he's a natural talent with a lot of very good, you know, ability for his age. And he's obviously got a lot of talent there as a footballer, but we risk burning players out when they're that sort of age and they play too much football when they're young. So yeah, he's a very good footballer, but I think there is a need to bring in somebody to sort of be that guiding person in their career, and he can kind of be that understudy and take a step back a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as the game progressed, obviously, can you really be wrote off after 1-0? I don't know, but certainly after 2, as soon as it got to 3, you know, it was good night, Vienna. Arsenal, you know, only 2.68 XG, if that's your thing, to Wolves is 0.51. I can't really remember a chance for Wolves really that was of note. Admittedly, though, I got the old multi-screen on to see the end in the second half for the relegation battle. So Saar didn't cover himself in a lot of glory either today. There's been a lot of talk about Saar over the last couple of weeks, and with Bentley, and I'm not sure. If rumours are to be believed, Villa are sniffing around him, but that seems like a bizarre one in itself. But a day at the office, a bad day at the office for the goalkeeper, Andy, today. But is it a case of the sum of the parts, or do you think Saar's just had a particular howler today?
I mean, for the fifth goal, that was inexcusable. It was a very tame shot right at him, and it somehow squirmed into the bottom corner. That was pathetic. But in his defence, this is what Arsenal have done all season. They have well and truly battered their XG. I think if you look at their XG, they've got like 30-odd percent more goals than what's expected. I don't want to say they're lucky, because it's not luck. There's also obviously skill towards it. But they've been very fortuitous. And I think that's a big part of why they were top of the league for so long, because they were outscoring their coverage. Eventually that catches up with you. today felt like it was an early season Arsenal performance in regards to the goals. But from our point of view, we didn't really press them. Like, the midfield was non-existent. The defence, like, Kilman tried, but wasn't great. And he seemed to just stick his leg out to try and stop stuff. And it everything fell to them, and none of our players were ever close to it. So it was just calamitous all round, really. It would be harsh just to pin it on Sarr, but he's also got to take some of the responsibility on at least two of them, actually. I thought this, the header on the second one, I might need to see it again, but it did look like he was absolutely nowhere near it. So there was a few. Why? But for next season, I wouldn't necessarily sell him unless the price was right, obviously. But at the same time, it is an area that we could probably improve. But then there's 10 other areas on the pitch we could probably improve as well.
Yeah, I like whatever universe that this actually exists in, if you believe in the multiverse. Sarr had over 4.5 goals in a double with the Southampton and Liverpool game, and Ivan Toney's going to blow the lid on it. Why isn't Collins and Kilman working as a pairing, do you think? Because it didn't work today. And, you know, Kilman has had a up and down season in comparison to how he's performed on seasons prior. And Collins, until he karate kicked, was it Grealish? You know, he was performing well. And then he come back from that suspension and he was a shadow of the player he was at the start of the season. It's just not working for the pair of them, is it, Jaffo? Is there a reason you think that is? And what about it, you know, are they solely to blame for us shipping five goals today? Or, again, is it more of a sum of all of the parts?
I think the result today is a sum of all the parts. I think there's probably maybe one player on the pitch or two players on the pitch who come out of it with any sort of credit. But I think the main issue when you look at Collins and Kilman is just a severe lack of minutes. I mean, between them, they've not played probably more than 38 games, 50 games at the most. Mm-hmm. And that this is a starting partnership at the start of the season for a Premier League team who are, you know, in theory, at the start of the season, we should have been looking to push into the top 10 and into the top half. That's where we were, because for so much of last season, you know, we were challenging for top four at parts. And it's crazy because when you've got a very young kid who in Collins who needs a lot of experience, needs a lot of nurturing next to him, and you've got Kilman. I know Kilman's a little bit younger, a bit of older, sorry, but he hasn't had the experience. He hasn't played the minutes. You haven't played enough football to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And until you play enough football to make mistakes and sort of learn from doing things wrong, you can't grow as a footballer. And when you've got two players at the same time who are going through that situation in Kilman and Collins, then you are just asking for, it's a recipe for disaster, to coin another, you know, sort of cliche, but it is. They are two very talented footballers. Kilman probably looks more suited to the Premier League. I think we've seen that the last 2 months. I think Kilman is the much better footballer at this point in his career. But I think what we've said a lot of in like group chats and stuff like that is that Collins would benefit from going and playing maybe in the Championship for a full season, or going and playing, you know, abroad or something like that, just so he can get a full season under his belt away from Molyneux, probably at a slightly lower level. So he can, if he's going to make mistakes, I'd rather him make them in the Championship for whoever, Norwich or, you know, whoever is going to take him, because we can't afford to have a player in his current state where he's going to make mistakes. It's going to cost us points, because we're a team that's very much on the edge of the blade, where one goal conceded could ruin a game for us. And that's the difference between no points and 3 points.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think one of the things that we have to try and remember is he's very young, Andy, isn't he? Collins is, he's not got a lot of time in the squad this season, and his age as well. It's got to be too early to write him off, or is it, you know, is it one of these where, you know, in the long term it may not work? You know, Lopetegui hasn't put too much faith in him since he joined the club, and therefore after displays like today, you can understand why you'd be hesitant to give him game time into next season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at it from the manager's point of view, you want to have someone who you know you can rely on, even if they're young. And I'm sure Lopetegui isn't going to expect him to come in and be, you know, Paolo Maldini. He's going to expect him to have this mistake in his game, and that's fine. But the problem is, if you know that he's going to do that every single game and it's going to cost you one or two goals, it gets to a point where you think, well, actually, I'm just not going to trust you at all.
Mm.
From a fan's point of view, you can see there is something there potentially, but it's probably 2 or 3 years down the line. He's not ready yet. Jaffer hit the nail on the head. A year in the Championship, you know, what, 46 games in the Championship season, I think would be really beneficial for him. He would be able to do all of the dirty side of football that is known in the Championship, you know, the piss and nettles of it all, I think would do really well for him, and he would mature from a season battling it out down there. I wouldn't want to write him off yet, but I don't want him in the team in the foreseeable.
Well, the interesting thing is, depending on what you read, what we believe, what comes out in the transfer window, can Wolves afford to send a player on loan and then have to get another defender in to backfill just for purely squad places more than anything? I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. The summer might be bumpy ahead, but, you know, Collins really does split opinion. Stephen, in the Facebook comments, he's not Premier League standard, and I would say he never will be. Slow, can't pass, and always has a mistake in him. 20 million was a shocking deal. It's interesting because I remember at the time when he came in, he was meant to be the player that was like the ball carrier and can carry the ball out of the defence and help set up attacks and stuff like that. And not sure we've really seen that to its fullest potential, to put it as kindly as possible.
But I think, was it Stephen who just made that comment? He's 20, 22, 21, something like that. Like, most defenders don't hit their prime until they're 27. So I wouldn't write him off yet. 20 million at the minute does look like an absolute piss take of a deal, but I wouldn't write him off yet.
Yeah, I'm trying to be as kind of open-minded about it as possible. But going back to the game itself, we're going to talk about kind of Lopetegui in general after we have our break in a short while. But going back to just purely this game, the mentality side of it fascinates me, because you've got a manager like Lopetegui who is really animated on the touchline, and he's and we've talked about a certain level of maturity or lack of it in this squad, an emotional lack of maturity. Yet in a game like this, we sort of fall over and allow our bellies to be tickled. So is there a mentality problem, and was it on display today, Jaffo, with this squad?
I think it came back again in full force. Knowing what... No, I don't know exactly what's going on inside of Lopetegui's head, but having an idea of how he is as a manager and how he wants to present himself, every game is important. And today, it just didn't come across like that. It just came across like it was a friendly game, it was a filler game.
Mm-hmm.
The players just didn't seem to want to put it in. You know, is granted, some of the players there are leaving or are out of contract, so will not want to get injured. You know, a la Raul, Adama Traore, you know, and some don't even want to be part of the squad at the moment. But it's difficult, because that whole side of it, and especially away from home and away from Molineux, under Lopetegui has been really, really poor. And I don't think anyone can quite put their fingers on it at the moment for how we can turn that around, because at the moment the away form is really, really bad. We just can't seem to put our stamp on a game, and we just can't seem to control it. And I think essentially big part of that is the emotional side of it. We've seen with Neves as part of the team, as part of the captain. I know he didn't start today, but when he's on the pitch, the emotion is very high. We're always moaning at referees, moaning about decisions, you know, getting our anxiety levels up and feeling, you know, like we're being egregiously done by referees and officials. I mean, Lopetegui, for God's sake, he's on a ban on 4 yellow cards. He's only been here since January. It's unheard of. And I think everyone needs to just relax and just. The thing is, football is a simple art form. And we allow ourselves to get sucked into the bullshit that surrounds football.
Mm-hmm.
So that you've got referees. Okay, referees make mistakes. They do things and they do things stupidly. But we allow ourselves to get sucked into that and become emotional about it. And it's not the right way to do it, because football is art and football is beauty and everything like that. So they just need to find a way to take a step back from that and just relax, because at the end of the day, they are professional footballers. They're good enough to do it. So just feel the feeling of the football pitch and just relax. You know what I mean? I don't know what else to say.
No, well said. As Andrew says in the chat as well, well said. We are going to try and relax, and we are going to have a short break to allow yourself, if you're very quick, grab yourself a drink and have a lie down as well, and try and ease this season out of your memory, as we all will be trying to do going into the summer ahead. But yeah, we're going to have a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Lopetegui, we're going to talk about Neves, and we're going to talk about another manager that has had a more positive end to the season that might be of interest to Wolves fans. But we'll be back with you very, very shortly. Welcome back to Wolves Fancast. So we're going to go and talk about Lopetegui in just a moment. However, there is news in the remaining football world outside of the Premier League. And Nuno ended up winning the Saudi League title in his season over there. Congratulations to Nuno for getting the silverware that I'm sure he so desperately covets. From a Wolves point of view, don't want to put too much fuel to the fire, but I'm sure as Wolves fans, we can be happy that Nuno got silverware. Andy, is this something that's a positive for you, or are you send, you know, bye-bye to Nuno? I don't care anymore.
Wouldn't say leave a club. They're dead to me. Fuck them. He won a league less competitive than Scotland. Well done.
Oh, that's a great question, Jaffo. Let's put all of these Scottish teams in a league with the Saudi teams. Is it you know, it's Scotland top 10, Saudi bottom 10? What are we thinking?
I'd say so. I think Al Ittihad and wherever the fuck Ronaldo's playing are probably the only two teams who could even, you know, put a dent on him. I mean, Al Ittihad had a good set of players. You know, I mean, Helder Costa's not a bad footballer still. Hagazi's sort of got Premier League experience, but that's about it. But, I mean, it's the Ronaldo effect now. It's 6 points clear when he joined, and they end up bottling the league. Well done, Cristiano, you fucking legend.
Well, that's it. Somewhere out there, little Dan, his spidey senses are tingling about this one. But I mean, for Nuno, nice to see him do well, but at the end of the day, I'm sure there are some Wolves Dars that are chomping at the bit for Nuno to be successful, I'm guessing. From one manager or ex-manager to another in Lopetegui, there's been a lot of talk about Lopetegui's future over the last kind of 48-72 hours. I know people have got column inches to fill, and I know we can't go a day or two without some kind of Wolves Twitter drama. But from your point of view, Andy, the Lopetegui thing, give me some rationale. Give me something so I shouldn't panic myself at night about this. Or, you know, should we be thinking, what if?
I honestly don't know what to say to quell your fears, because who knows what's going on in his head. He seems a very up and down kind of a person. Like, as Jaffo said before, he seems to be a very emotional guy, and that seems to change with the wind a little bit. If he's not going to get the money that he wants, or rather the players that he wants on his timetable, he doesn't seem the kind of person who's going to be happy with that. But also at the same time, he does seem to be kind of happy at Wolves. I mean, we're only going by what he said, and obviously what he said could be bullshit, but he doesn't seem to be wanting to go out of the door. So I really don't know. And I think if you're Jeff Shee, you've got to be a little bit worried that your 6 years spent chasing this man could blow up in his face within 6 months.
It's a strange one. I don't want to take too much away from what will be the end of season review show that we're going to be doing as well. But Jaffo, from your point of view, obviously, there's this weird habit that we've got, especially away from home, of chopping and changing lineups. And people have talked about, you know, as we did in the first half of this podcast, talk about the mentality of the squad and talking about kind of the fight and the desire there. And some of that, maybe 50% or more, has to be attributed to the manager. Do you think that's an issue there? Do you think that's something, you know, that this game against Arsenal highlighted as well?
Yeah, I think it was just a microcosm for the whole of the time that Lopetegui's been here. I just think the one thing that Lopetegui's really struggled to do away from home is stamp identity onto Wolves' team, because we've never really looked balanced. I mean, you look at all the time that he's been here in the away games, there's maybe one or two where we played okay and we played well, but the thing is, you look across the whole stretch of it, there's no continuous philosophy, and there's no continuous style and pattern to what we want to do. Whereas Wolves at home under Lopetegui, we have this idea of wanting to hit teams on the break, wanting fast counters, moving the ball quickly. And that's the thing now is how he translates away from the tombola or whatever people want to call it. He's having a settled 11, but you need 11 players who are really going to buy into that philosophy and buy into what Lopetegui wants to do. And with Lopetegui, he needs to come up with that solid philosophy for how he's going to have success.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, if we change four players in the summer and four go, four come in, we still have a team that should be performing a lot higher than 13th in the league. You know, okay, granted, we're probably missing a sort of a forward that could score enough goals to push us into sort of the echelons of top seven, but certainly we should be in between 8th and 11th,
mm-hmm.
especially with the players that we've got. So he needs to come up with a plan, and that's the time now, that between now and August when we kick off again, we need to have something solid in place so that we can get results away from home as well as at Molineux, because Fortress Molineux is not going to keep us up again next season.
It's interesting because, you know, Sean in the comments there, Andy, mentioned about having that off season. When he took over before the World Cup, there was a month or give or take for him to implement, but he was also playing with a chessboard that wasn't his own. It wasn't his mm-hmm. pieces on the playing or on the board, so to speak. So how much leeway do you give Lopetegui in terms of it's job done, we survived? You can argue if it was the miracle that some people say it is, or if it's the absolute bare minimum was that we should have stopped up. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that in terms of, you know, is Lopetegui and Arsenal, let's refer it back to this game, is he just doing the absolute bare minimum that with this squad, or actually is it a case that the players aren't good enough, they're not to his standard, or they're not playing the way he wants to play, and he's just got us through by hook or by crook?
It's really difficult. Like, I'm quite analytical when I look at performances. I like to see the stats on the other side of things, and we haven't ever looked convincing on paper when you look at stuff like XG and like the quality of chances that we give away each week. We should be losing a lot more than we've been winning. Even at home, when we've won games, we haven't done it to a convincing level. I think the fans have given Lopetegui a lot of leeway with that, because we can see the players that are out there either don't fit his standard or they're not of the standard they need to be for this league. It's one or the other. But we know the players aren't quite right for him. So I think I'm quite happy to, you know, with him continuing to build his team and implement the way that he wants to play. I do think he needs a proper pre-season. He did have the World Cup break, but he was having to play catch up on the fact that, you know, all the players we had were so lacking in fitness from the actual pre-season they had that he was always chasing his tail a little bit. So I think give him sort of the start of next season and we will see the Lopetegui effect in full flow. And if it's good, fantastic. If it's bad, then those 6 years that we mentioned before are going to kind of look dreadful. I'm hoping it's more the players than the manager, but I do think the manager is also going to need to improve. Like Jaffo said, he's going to need a settled 11. This chopping and changing every week. And someone put a picture on Twitter earlier of Wolves home and Wolves away, and it was the Michael Jordan film.
Yeah.
No, the animated one from the 90s.
Okay.
Oh, Space Jam. Yeah.
Space Jam. And the picture was that Wolves at home was the Munstars, as they are big and burly, and Wolves away are like the ones before they've had the special drink where they're all tiny and timid. And that needs to stop. Like, they've got to be monsters, both sides, both home and away. So that's where we've got to be heading.
Yeah. No, well said. I mean, in terms of the game from today, I didn't want this. Hate to lose, of course. They have quality and we have to do better. It's about intensity, which I think we've said has been lacking pretty much since we've been safe. If you go down on your intensity, you've lost because the level is very high. But again, you know, great buzzwords and they look great on a motivational poster, but they have to be delivered. And I'm not sure in my heart of hearts whether that's a manager not getting the best motivationally out of their players or the players not wanting or having the desire to do it. And I think I said earlier to in another group chat that I'm in that, you know, I don't think these results happen if we needed something. I don't think it would have been that way. I don't think we'd have like rolled over in the way that we had over the last few games, but you know, it's a difficult one to kind of judge really.
The problem is though, Matt,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. Under Lopetegui, we've had three games where we've shipped in four or more goals.
Mm-hmm.
Like that intensity, that's like should be bare minimum. And we don't see it anywhere near regularly enough to have lost. I think we've had four across the season, but three under Lopetegui where we've shipped in four goals. In half a season, that's not acceptable.
Mm.
And he sounds great in that interview snippet. Like, if he was interviewing for a job, great, well done, you've hit the buzzwords. But there's got to be a point where you need to implement that on the pitch. And from minute one today, there was no intensity. I mean, even yeah. Joe Gomez, who has been the pit bull for us, he looked lost today. He looked like a fucking chihuahua. He was really poor today. He was completely anonymous.
Yeah.
That intensity, you can talk about it, but if you ain't going to show it, it's worthless.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. One of the really bittersweet things about this is obviously this was the real last dance, not the one at home. I mean, the problem is with this, like much like the Infinity War saga, it ended with Endgame and it ended at the Everton game and we had the goodbyes and we had everything else. And now this game was the rest of the MCU in all these phases where we just really didn't need it nor want it. It was obviously the last dance for a number of players today, allegedly and you know, logically, Neves, etc. I can't remember who it was. It might have been you, Andy, so apologies if I'm misquoting you, but didn't even notice he'd come on until about 10, 15 minutes into the second half. Such was the lack of kind of quality in the game today. That aside, though, you know, it's upsetting that, you know, Moutinho never got the chance to say goodbye, making it out like this is some kind of schlocky rom-com here. and then obviously Neves' last game as well today. It's a very bittersweet end to the season with this game, unfortunately. But one of the positives is there is no more Wolves this season. It's done. It's over. We can relax. Jaffo, what are you going to do with your free time in this Wolvesless world for the next few months?
I don't have any free time, so I'm going to be focusing on pre-season with the team that I'm managing next season. So getting things ready for that. So I eat, sleep and breathe football, so I will not be slowing down at all. So yeah, busy boy.
Good way to be. Andy, from your point of view, obviously football takes up a lot of the weekend and everything else. Are you glad for the little bit of respite now from football over the summer? We know kind of international, obviously there's qualifiers and stuff, but are you looking forward to a bit of a break?
I am a little bit. It's been a long old season, and like, as fun as the World Cup was, it's made the season even longer. And it hasn't been a fun season for us, has it? So I am looking forward to just having a little bit of a break and maybe spending the odd day playing God of War Ragnarok when I finally complete the last one, and just spending a bit of quality time doing absolutely nothing and just enjoying myself.
It's going to be really interesting. Is it the 2nd of June the season ticket renewal runs out?
It is, yeah.
There and thereabouts. I mean, Stu, who is our resident kind of finance man in the group chat, which is terrifying if you knew Stu as we do. You know, he talks about how the renewal rate's always really high, and you know, as a fan base, we must be suckers for punishment, really, with that. It's going to be interesting to see how that kind of translates into the season going ahead. But it's whether, I guess, it's genius, really, to have those deadlines before a penny has been spent in the transfer window. You know, there's a reason why they don't let those deadlines go all the way to like the start of the season or anything like that. But yeah. Absolutely. But in terms of Arsenal, congratulations to them. They will always remember this as the season that they nearly won the Premier League. You know, they were impressive today, but against a Wolves team that were obviously lacking quite severely. Our friends down the road, obviously, they are going to be languishing in the Championship once again. So it could be worse, Wolves fans out there. It could certainly be worse. Matt Bradley just put in the chat, I wonder how many players already know their surplus if J-Lo gets his way. It's an interesting point, really. Who knows? This could be an absolute cull in the summer, but it's whether, I guess, we have the funds then to replenish what we lost. I mean, it makes me a little nervous. I don't know about you two, about having like another bare, paper-thin squad in terms of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, we bemoaned it when we had Nuno and we were doing quite well. We were worried about it, and to do it now off the back of a pretty shitty season would be horrendous. It would like stink of Mick McCarthy's first season when we had like, what is it, 6 professionals when we started the season or something like that. It would be kind of worrying, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we really appreciate your time spent with us today. Once again, just want to let you know about the charity match that we have on the 2nd of June at Molineux. There are spectators tickets available. It is for Mind, which is a great cause. It goes towards a mental health charity. And we've not been shy about talking about mental health on this podcast and how it's a really important cause. So we'd appreciate any donation, big or small, would really help towards making this a success. And we know that you, the listeners and viewers, you know, you've always been really good. The Wolves community is a really good one when it comes to kind of charity. I know that other podcasters and content creators do a lot for charity. And as a fan base, we've always stepped up. So I'm sure, once again, the fan base will do that. Gents, thank you very much for joining us on this last episode of the season. There will be a season review coming up on the Fancast, and we'll kind of let you know what the plan is over the summer period as to what we're going to be getting on with. Just once again, really appreciate your time. If you enjoyed what you saw today, please like and subscribe on YouTube and the other accounts on Twitter as well. It'll help just grow us as a podcast and as a content creator and enable us to get out and give more when we can. Cheers, Peter. Have a good break. As I say, we're going to be doing a lot over the summer anyway, so hopefully you'll be with us along for the ride. But for now, Jaffo, if you'd like to say goodbye.
Good evening.
Andy, if you would like to say goodbye.
See you soon, everyone.
Everybody, have a great rest of the week, and we will see you soon.
Who would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot.